Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments.
Welcome back, all you listeners. It is episode 38, Irene. And it is a brisk, cold evening in the Boston area. And Irene, what temperature is it up there in Maine?
I don't know. Believe it or not, I've only been outside maybe twice today, and it felt like in the high 30s. That's all I can think of. Yesterday was a balmy 55, and it was a lovely walk.
It was definitely gorgeous yesterday. I actually went out and harvested radishes in the garden yesterday still with kids. So it was such a nice day. But for our guest this evening, Diana, please introduce yourself. Say hello.
Hello.
Diana Sette is the horticultural therapist at the University Hospital's Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital in Cleveland, Ohio. At the hospital, she cares for a 7,500 square foot healing garden, while also providing horticultural therapy services for patients and caregivers throughout the hospital. But Diana received a certificate in horticultural therapy from HTI, which both Irene and myself did go to as well. She holds certificates in ecotherapy as both a permaculture designer and teacher, which I think is so cool, and is a proud supporter of the National Wildlife Federation's Certified Wildlife Habitat Program. In 2021 and 2022, Diana was honored as a healthcare hero by Flying Horse Farms and selected as an Ohio Herbal Elder by the United Plant Savers. You will learn more about everything that Diana has done in the past as Irene slowly goes through this interview, but we are very thankful to have Diana here on tonight to learn more about your aha moment. And I will put up her full bio with the podcast upload episode, as well as, is it okay if I put up your email too, your Gmail or your dianawoodpress.com?
Yeah, the WordPress, that sounds good. The website.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks. Well, I'm so excited. Irene, take it away.
Thank you. What a great, again, we're always impressed by our guests' portfolio, CV, resume, whatever you want to call it. But just in general, just like the enthusiasm and passion that they all have. And so many of your certifications and honors, et cetera, are names that I am not familiar with at all. I just have to ask, how do you become a elder, an herbal elder? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. It wasn't an application process by any means. It was so the United Plant Savers, they are a really amazing organization that has a botanical sanctuary in Southern Ohio. But they do work really nationally and also internationally around the conservation of medicinal at-risk plants. So everything from golden seal and ginseng and black cohosh and really looking at how to preserve these and where there are traditional cultures that are still harvesting them in sustainable ways and things like that. I was kind of an unusual candidate in that way because I am not in the practice of prescribing herbs or herbal medicine. And while I personally use herbs as my primary, you know, if I am sick and I have my teas and all the things, but obviously I don't do that at the hospital. So it's more about the relationship with the plants and how that heals in that sort of way. So it was an honor to be connected with that group. They're pretty amazing.
So they were embracing your horticultural therapy approach to it. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Let's focus a little bit on what the day of Dhyana Sete is like, and that, you know, what you're doing at your place of work right now. And then we'll do a little bit of a backtrack, a history of Dhyana. Okay. So give everyone a sense of what you are doing on a daily basis.
So, the healing garden that, was mentioned. So that is on the rooftop of the pediatric children's hospital, the Rainbows Babies and Children's Hospital. And so there is an outdoor portion of the garden. And then there is also an indoor horticultural therapy suite and a large lounge area with lots of natural light. It's really beautiful. And so it's all open year round. And that's where my desk is based, and my kind of home base. I joke that it's like the best office in the whole hospital, because it's filled with plants. So my day starts off there, and, you know, caring for the plants. There's a large assortment of house plants and tropical plants indoors. And then this time of year, with the snow on the ground, I'm not doing as much outside, but there is still an outside portion, and we do keep that open. So, you know, if any patient or visitors do want to get outside, we have different kind of resources available, like blankets and warm hats and things so people can go outside. So I am stationed up there, and my day can vary depending on what's going on up there. We have different programming that happens up on the rooftop floor. There's one day a week where I am, there's also an art therapist who works up on the rooftop. Mm-hmm. So she'll open have a open art therapy studio session. And so I'll work with her in terms of, we've been focusing a lot, especially recently, on using more natural materials in the art making and really drawing that part into it. When she is cross-covering, the art therapist, then that gives me a chance to go on to the floors. For example, I have regular weekly group sessions that I can go down to the child and adolescent psychiatric unit, and that's a locked-in unit. And so those patients, they can't leave that floor. And so I'm able to bring a cart down and do some gardening with them, which is really great. And they're depending on the age groups, there can be maybe two groups. And then also depending on, you know, whatever people are going through, if they're in able to do a group session, or if they need more of a one-on-one, I can then go around and, you know, meet with them individually and do sessions like that. So after doing that kind of thing, you know, charting, you know, putting in just kind of notes from sessions and how things went and what can be planned for other sessions, preparing supplies.
How many sessions do you do a day?
So again, seasonally, it kind of varies. You know, it can tend to be slower in the winter time because, there's just not as many people who come up to the rooftop. Mm-hmm. So I just shared about going onto the floors, but majority of my time is more of drop-in kind of sessions. I do have once a week is kind of a scheduled time. That's a garden therapy group that patients can come up and things. But truly, there's majority of the time, unless I'm not involved in some kind of meeting or some other direct project I'm in, I can shift gears and work with any patient or caregiver who comes up to the roof and would like to do some kind of engagement with the plants. Or
if you don't mind, let me see if I can ask a couple more clarifying questions. So with the children that you are doing the sessions with, Are we talking 5 years old, 10 years old, a range of those ages, and how long are they in, you know, the hospital for getting treatment? Does that also vary as far as, you know, 2 weeks, 1 day, et cetera?
Yeah. So it, I really serve anyone that can comes through. And so at the hospital, you know, we have everything from a level one trauma unit emergency, which I'm not typically going to see those patients because they're, you know, the acute and much more engaged in other things. But, you know, it could be someone who is preparing to come in for a surgery and they're just taking a brief tour and they're outpatient, or they are coming in to maybe get a transfusion or a checkup, like a monthly checkup for chemo or something as an outpatient, or they may be somebody who was here for a few days or longer, weeks, months even, depending on if they're, you know, what their condition is.
Are they with their parents or any other adults, or are they doing this mostly independently with you?
So that varies also. So sometimes they're with their parent or adult, or, you know, a grandparent or something, but then they can also be brought up by volunteers if they're cleared to be able to leave their floor. And then my position is a part of the child and family and child life services department. So that includes all the child life specialists, the creative art therapists, which is music and art therapy, and then also the library and the school teachers. And so I work often in terms of co-treatment with those different coworkers. So I might get a heads up from, you know, one of the child life specialists will say, hey, you know, I've got a kiddo who really could use some time out of their room and doing, you know, whatever, giving me some kind of background of the situation, or, you know, letting me know whether some specific medical conditions they have, and so that I can be aware for adapting things, or it can really vary. So sometimes I don't know. Sometimes nurses will just kind of be like, oh, this is Diana. This is our horticultural therapist. Here's the garden, and I'm going to leave them. And, you know, but it's never just a patient by themselves, because they're a child. They need to have someone with them.
And so the plants that you work with, you were mentioning house plants and tropical plants for the indoor or on the floor services. Where do you get those from? Do you find them from a wholesale supplier, and do you grow them on from little babies to mature species?
So all of those things. So Yeah, we have some great community partners who regularly donate. You know, our area, we're very close to some of the biggest nurseries in the country, in Lake County, Ohio. But there's one company, Petiti's. They are a really amazing supporter of the whole hospital in general, but they also have this amazing plant nursery. So I can go out and I typically get annuals and vegetable plants and things like that from them. And then there's a really amazing tropical plant store company business, Urban Plants in Cleveland. And they always are giving me different plants so that I can get just straight give plants to people. But then I take cuttings. I like especially to plants that I can propagate and use again for things. That's a great way that I like to save on supply costs, you know, and just kind of having to grow your own materials, you know.
Do the kids get to take home some of their plant pets, et cetera? Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's always the goal is bring things with them.
And then the rooftop, the rainbow, is that what it's called? The rainbow?
Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital.
Okay, Rainbow Babies.
The garden is Angie's Garden.
Oh, okay. So is Angie's Garden primarily edible? Or what is the setup like that?
That's a good question. It's not. I definitely have been increasing the amount of edibility from blueberry bushes and strawberries, and just got these really neat cultivars of apple trees that the variety is called Urban Apples, and they only get 3 feet wide and 7 feet tall, which is kind of wild. The apples kind of just stack on the branches. So I'm experimenting with them in some containers right now, which is pretty neat. But primarily there are native perennials is really the focus. I kind of fill things in with annuals. But because I want to have more time to work with patients, it's kind of always that tricky balance of how much time do I put towards plant care, and then how much, with patient. And especially because it's a rooftop, there's some challenges because the soil is a substrate. It's not as much of a, what you would find in especially in terms of organic material in the soil. So there's some tricky stuff with that. And many like vegetables, I have to put them in pots because they don't grow well in the rooftop substrate. But
so it is an actual green roof, not just planters on a roof.
Yes.
Okay.
There are planters. Yes. It was designed with drainage.
So that's why you have the native or the succulents, et cetera, in that very coarse, well-drained substrate. Okay.
And that's cleared. There's like ramps all over. There's like ramps and there's a lot of walking spaces too. But there's this huge rainbow arch. I'm looking at it right now. So
okay. Yes.
I haven't been there. No, but someday to.
You get into the tactile plants, especially for kiddos, or the aromatics or any of that nature.
Absolutely. So outside the first kind of lowest raised bed, it's it's maybe 12 inches as a raised bed, so it's easy to be able to walk up to. And those I primarily have herbs there, so they're thyme, oregano, a few different kinds of sage, and lavender, and and there's definitely lamb's ear, and some other Dusty Miller is really popular in different parts, and a lot of the fuzzy, and inside too. When I select plants for indoor, I'm always thinking about texture, like a variety. I've had this velvet calathea that is like the, it's like the most high maintenance plant ever, but it's like, but I'm like, if I can keep this diva happy for, people just like, it's always gets the, ooh, when they touch it, cause it doesn't look like it's supposed to be soft. And then you touch it and you're like, oh my gosh. So I love the sensory.
I love that you call it a diva.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the peace lily, but I feel like the peace lily is more easygoing, but it's just more dramatic, like lets you know if it's thirsty and like all the leaves drop down and you're like, oh my gosh, you act like you're dying, but you're just thirsty. You give them the water and they're like, I'm good. And you're like, oh my gosh. So
yeah. Yes. We all need hydration. See everybody?
Exactly.
You don't want to look like a peace lily that's thirsty too much.
Absolutely. Good communication.
Or the sensitive plant that will go if you touch it, et cetera. So those are great plants for kids to experiment the understanding of tactile impact or water, et cetera. So now going into the journey of becoming a horticultural therapist, you know, whether it's becoming or at least understanding the value of plants and to our well-being, what were some of the stages of you realizing this? Was it a one smack, oh my God, I realized this discovery, or has it been kind of like a process of stepping stones?
Well, you know, I feel like in many ways, it wasn't until this position that I had this title and that I looked back and my journey and I was like, it all makes sense now because it was I've always worked in many ways with plants and people. It's always been plants and people, but it's been in a lot of different contexts. And so I've worked there was a period of time I worked at a family homeless shelter, and I did a gardening at the shelter at in Vermont, and did a cooking program that was with them. And then I worked at a alternative boarding high school that was Rock Point School, is based on a 300 acres in Vermont, and we would do beekeeping and maple syrup, and we had a garden there and a kitchen garden and lots of outdoor activities. And then I was in a puppet theater company, but it was based bread and puppet theater. And then it was on a farm. So there was all this, the plants. And so it's like, I wouldn't have just joined the theater by itself if there wasn't the farm. Mm. It was always such an important part to connect with the land. And I was working with the Cleveland Botanical Garden. They had an urban agriculture program for teens, and it's called Green Core. It's changed since it was, but it was one of the earliest urban agriculture programs. I think the thing that was sort of the aha moment for me was where I realized, you know, for me, I wasn't so much interested. Like, I've always been fascinated by learning about plants and nature, and I was a certified arborist, and, you know, pursuing learning about the botany and the terminology and ecology. But the thing that always kind of is the real why for me is that transformative nature of the what happens in relationship to plants, and the healing part of that. And I think there was an aha moment for me, particularly when I was working with this urban agriculture program with teens in Cleveland. And this farm, the Central Learning Farm, is in the center, and there's public housing projects that surround it. And it's pretty awesome in that the teens who worked on the farm live right, you know, many of them could walk to work on the farm in the morning. And, you know, and so we did everything from they learning how to grow this everything and then going to farmers markets and all that stuff. But I think the real power for me was, one, the creating the community and seeing that of how that forms. And then there were a couple of the crew members, they had lost family members to gun violence during the season. And the way that I saw how healing it was for them to have this life-affirming place to go to every day, and that they could contribute to something that was positive and bigger than them in many ways, and that they could, you know, have a that those things of like a sense of control and be able to make choices that are positively impacting the health of themselves and others, and just the courage of just being able to show up like that. And I think there's different seeds like that along the way that, you know, for me, it was like, Yeah, I love sharing with people about plants, but it's the deeper, like, spiritual and the emotional, mental, all those healing benefits, and yeah. and the way that that affects all of the physical things, obviously, too. You know, I think the psychosocial benefits, those, you know, if that space is not in a great place, healing physically is so much harder. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and when it doesn't feel like it's intentional to the self, but it's about just growing food or growing plants to survive in a way, then you realize that there is a much more holistic experience happening. And, yeah. And so it doesn't feel so intentional, you know, it's not like self-help, you know, it's more like, hey, I want to give a chance to nurture something, to give back. And then in turn, I'm giving myself that chance to recuperate to have a chance to, feel stronger and better overall. So
it's not as, there's not as much, like, there's not a pretentious kind of, or like intimidation also. I think, you know, I joke with my coworkers sometimes. I'm saying, like, HT is like sneaky PT, like physical therapy, because, you know, like, people are way more excited to get out of their wheelchair and, you know, stand up to smell the flowers, or look, they did their 10 reps of holding
exactly
and out, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Sneaky.
Sorry, that is the most. That's hilarious. I can't get over that.
Yeah.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
Definitely a good way. Yeah, it's amazing what it can do to break down barriers and boundaries and people's self-imposed inhibitions or limitations. Sometimes too, not necessarily always self-imposed, but oftentimes it is. Like, you know that term, I can't do that, but then when they're motivated enough to go smell something, they can do it, you know?
So. Yeah. And I definitely emphasize that a lot too, of like, you know, you don't need to know what it's called to appreciate it and enjoy it. And if there is any of that kind of like, well, I've always been I've always been a brown thumb. I never had a green thumb. And I always, you know, tell people, well, the only difference between like a master gardener and a brand new gardener, they've just killed more plants, you know, like you just, you know, like everybody, that happens. That's how you learn sometimes. And, you know, and you have to get your hands dirty. So you got to have a brown thumb. So,
Listening to you as well about the populations with whom you've worked with, it sounds like you've had a natural gravitational pull towards youth overall. Is that accurate to say?
Yes, I definitely worked with adults as well. Some of the first mental health, social service kind of work I was doing was with dual diagnosed mental health outpatient. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think my passion is, I really love working with anybody in plants, but children are just, and youth, I love teens, but I also just love the way that, you know, can sit with all ages and sort.
Well, I have to say you're a rarity to say that you love teens.
I do love teens. I do. Oh my gosh. Yes.
So all the power to you, girl. I mean, my goodness.
I work with middle school, high school.
Yes.
We're
yes.
A breed.
Yes. I love it. Oh yeah. My gosh.
No. I'm being silly, but it is true. Like, there's certain HTs who gravitate to certain populations, and it's not intentional. It just seems to be a draw, you know? So,
yeah. I think one of the things I really love about the hospital environment is that I can work with, you know, such a large, such a range of patients. I mean, there's some patients who are there more for behavioral kind of things, and some that are more that they are developmentally different in different ways, or Yeah, or, you know, they've been hospitalized for a long time and are facing cancer, or and then there's the patients who are there for more specific for psychiatric stuff. But obviously, yeah, children and adolescents and youth.
In Cleveland, what is the HT presence like as far as practitioners go? Do you have a network nearby?
Well, so Karen Kennedy is one of the, you know, primary people with HTI. And so she started one of the earliest horticultural therapy programs near Cleveland at the Holden Arboretum. And so she's still in the area, and there's an herb society she's involved with that's, you know, local. So there's lots of plant people. I know one other horticultural therapist in the area. But yeah, it's not anything dreamy like some of the other networks I know, or there's whole group of people. Yeah.
And I guess what I'm curious about is when you fortunately got the job that you have right now, which sounds amazing and super rewarding. Did you feel like, well, first off, was it a requirement? Because it's interesting for our listeners to hear about, you know, what jobs are out there for horticultural therapists, or are there requirements that the job is fulfilled by an horticultural therapist, or is it just somebody who's a plant enthusiast and gets along with people? You know, like, what were some of the, you know, qualifications that were required for your position? Can you elaborate?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there had been, since the garden has opened, there had been two other people in the position I'm in, but prior they were horticulturalists. And so this is the first time that they had somebody with the horticultural therapy certificate. So it was kind of like in when they put out their call for a job application, they were looking for somebody who obviously has the plant skill set and the people skill set. But like you said, it's oftentimes people are one or the other. And so for when I applied for the position, they actually had put the application out twice for the position because the first round they didn't find any candidates that could do both. And so when they put it out again and I applied, and they were like, oh my gosh. And that's partly why I feel like it was kind of an aha moment for me too, because I was like, oh yeah, that's what I've been doing. Yeah. And I, at that point I already had, a certificate in ecotherapy. But then I pursued the horticultural therapy certificate, after
while
starting.
Working.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's good. So that, yeah. Okay. So, and that's also wonderful when your place of employment can support you on that track as well. So, we're winding down and we have a signature question that we present at the end of every interview.
Like a signature drink, you know. I just
okay.
do something because I feel like I'm actually doing something as part of the podcast. No, I do a lot of the back end work, you know, but
it's important.
It is. I we wouldn't have this without Erin, that's for sure.
So with all your experience in horticulture and working with clients for so long, what would be like your go-to plant or group of plants that you really like to work with?
Ooh, let me just think for just a minute.
We've actually had some guests that say, I can't decide. I can't give you one, you know.
Well, I think it changes every day in many ways. I kind of have favorites for different things.
I love it every day.
Yeah.
There's 365 favorite plants.
Exactly.
Name them all. We got time.
Okay. Well, let's see. I think let's just say that today
Today's
okay. No, is- I'm changing it. Okay, we'll do lavender. I think, you know, I mean, that's kind of, it feels cliche, but it is such a powerful plant.
Yeah,
in so many ways, for its texture, how it looks, its smell. Obviously, you can use it dried as well as fresh, and so many different ways. And
I think feels good too when you touch it. It has a nice, you know, soft kind of velvety texture.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of variety in, you know, you can get different kinds of lavender. I mean, some are a little more bushy, the flower. Some are more the longer. And
I don't accept your plant of the day.
Okay, I was going to say geranium just because I'm having that moment of like, you know, they've all come inside now. So I just love how they can be so amazing outside, and then you bring them in and they can bloom still and just be really beautiful, and their smell. And oh, but begonias. I mean, we could talk about begonias. Oh, I just got this wild Rex begonia that, oh my gosh. So I have these two that are that I like to keep on my cart next to each other. And one patient was like, that's like the hairy leg plant, because it like stem was all like and it just was such a cool texture of its leaf. And then the one, this other kind that was very satiny looking and shiny. So I just love showing people, you know, like, we're all humans, but look how different we are. And these are the same kind of, these are both begonias, but look how different they are. And just, you know.
That's so perfect. That is great. Yeah.
I will accept the begonia answer.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
Erin doesn't like lavender for some odd, crazy reason. She doesn't like it.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I love mint too. I know some people are like, oh, mint. But I just love mint.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. Powerful plant.
Exactly.
Well, those are wonderful. And I love that what you shared about somebody's observation. It's the hairy leggy plant.
Yeah. It's the hairy leg plant. It's so funny. I just love the different things, you know, observations people have.
And then we can use that. We use that towards our other, you know, guidance through with other people too. They give us the tools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing some ponytail palm hairdos lately too.
Oh, yep.
Funny. We've been like playing with the idea of like a ponytail palm. So we're like, you know, styling the hair of the ponytail palm.
You can be that for Halloween next year, a ponytail palm.
Yeah. And I recommend, if anybody hasn't seen this, there's what is his name? There's a really amazing, it's so funny, putting googly eyes on plant leaves.
I've seen that.
Yeah. You know, that just cracks me up. So that's, you know, there's so many fun things you can do just without even planting. You can just make eye contact with your plants. So,
make them animate objects of sorts. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Diana. It was a real pleasure having you as our guest this evening for our November episode. And Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, all that good stuff.
Happy New Year. No.
Happy New Year.
I know it's been up too quick. But thank you very much for coming out tonight and for being our guest and sharing your story. It was great to virtually meet you, and we hope to meet you in person someday soon.
Yes, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it and appreciate your work.
All right.
Bye, listeners.
Bye, listeners. We will see you next month to end 2023. All right. Good night.
Bye.